So last week, we had several readings from the book of the prophet Amos. Now we've moved on to Hosea. These are two of the old school prophets of the Old Testament. By old school, I mean the books that are written are some of the oldest in the Bible. So I mentioned, I think last week, that Genesis, Deuteronomy, Exodus, Numbers, Leviticus, those are, although they tell the story and have sources that go all the way back to Moses, they are newer books than Amos and Hosea because they were constantly being edited and reworked. Because they were the principal text of the people of Israel, so they were constantly revamping them based on their experience. But these books were specific to a period, specific to a purpose, and so they were written and then they were done with. And they were referred to very specifically to the northern kingdom. So again, I'll repeat that after King Solomon, so you had King David, he unites all the 12 tribes of Israel. King Solomon, his son, he tries to unite all the kingdom. He continues it, he builds the temple, helps solidify kingdoms, but he also got a little bit too arrogant. Wisdom is a dangerous thing. So he eventually starts marrying a whole bunch of the local ladies from all the different tribes to kind of make for peace. And all of these different people, all of these different wives that he had convinced him to worship the gods of the neighboring communities. Very gradually then, he loses the faith, and then kingdom of Israel gets split in two. Judah in the south, Israel in the north. Judah is basically Judah, the tribe of Judah, and spatterings of Benjamin, and then the north were the rest of them. And they were called the kingdom of Israel. And I mentioned, I think it was the Samaritan reading, not this Sunday, but the Sunday before, the Samaritans that come out, and you see in the Gospels, they are descendants from the northern tribes. And so that's why today's first reading talks about the Samaritans. Because Hosea and Amos were prophets who spoke to the north, who warned them of their impending doom at the hands of the Assyrian Empire. And the premise of their doom was that they had been faithless. Amos talks primarily about social justice issues. Hosea takes a slightly different, more graphic tack. So yesterday, the readings we didn't hear in our public mass is the God of Israel telling his people that they have become adulteresses. It's one of the first texts, even though it's very old, it's one of the first texts where covenantal infidelity is characterized as marital infidelity. And it's a weird thing because it's a chicken and egg problem. Marital infidelity happens long after covenantal infidelity has taken root. But it takes a long time, usually a few decades, maybe a generation, for the sins of parents to become noticeable. So usually you only catch it 50 years after the problem has already been established. The people of Israel became faithless. Very gradually then it becomes noticeable in many of their other institutions. And they gradually wonder, like, how did this happen? What's going wrong? I think things are going quite well. Absolutely things are going well. No. Well, we just have a few problems. And then the Assyrians show up and... So the reason why we have the books of northern prophets in the Bible is the people of Judah are able to say, look what happened to them. Look what happened to them. Don't do the same. That was the warning, especially through the book of the prophet Isaiah, etc., etc., etc. Well, it didn't quite work, the warnings, because as I mentioned last week as well, the northern kingdom is wiped out. And then the southern kingdom is like, yes, we were spared. And then around 200 years later, the Babylonians are back and they're gone. But they weren't wiped out. That's the difference. Is that often when we follow the Lord, we will encounter some terrible difficulties, some real profound sadnesses, and we will encounter definite needs of renewal. But as Christ warns us, especially in his farewell discourses, when he says goodbye to his disciples at the Last Supper, all of those things that we build up that are not done, grafted, or in him are cut off from the vine, withered and burned. So one of the things that we can sometimes forget in our Christian tradition is how many things have thought to have been branched off and to have grown in the name of God, and then a decade or a century later, just gone. Fads of spirituality, trends of theology, processes of, I'm trying to come up with alliterations, but I lost the third one with the letter P, so be it. All of these different ways in which people can be novel with God, and they all just, poof, they eventually turn to nothing. And eventually, this also engenders in a society a type of cynicism, because we want progress, we want growth, we want excitement, and so we'll go and look after wherever we might happen to find it. But then every now and again, the true prophet shows up, and they don't tell us to find something new. They tell us to basically pay attention to what we should have already been doing in the first place. So Jesus expels demons, and they're blown away because they've never seen anything like this. So they're really excited. But the Pharisees obviously are not so excited, not because they don't see the obvious fruits that are happening right in front of them, but they don't want to be his disciple. So they're willing to come up with any excuse possible. Any excuse possible to prevent them from actually having to respond to Jesus' call. So they'll say, it is by the demons that he expels the demons. In one of the other Gospels, Jesus responds and says, like, that is ridiculous. How can Satan expel Satan? If a kingdom is divided itself against itself, how can it stand? You know that passage. But here's the problem with that. Even though Jesus does say that, and it's still true, have you ever noticed, though, that in a culture like our own, we're always shifting blame? It always winds up going in circles. And this is, in fact, how the Pharisees complained that Jesus operated. Shifting lies, shifting deceits. So very often what's happening these days, and this is kind of sad, because we have no sense of newness. Have you ever noticed that nobody comes up with a new way of following the Lord, true righteousness? Now today, all they can do is condemn people. They'll go in the news and they find one more social movement, one more thing to criticize, one more injustice to tear down, one more thing to just basically say, well, that's just an institution of patriarchy or liberalism or traditionalism or economic capitalism or communism. They're always looking for something that is the threat, but they never look for what's actually their life. And so in a weird way, our kingdom has in fact become a kingdom divided against itself. And it doesn't stand. In fact, one of the other ways in which we try to find stability are through lies. We've gotten so accustomed to it that the moment a politician says something, we immediately assume he's a liar. The moment that somebody even gives us a promise, we immediately assume, what's his angle? Now, I don't think that we shouldn't have any certain amount of cynicism when it comes to our politicians. But what I mean to say is, if it gets so deep, then how on earth are we to have a renewal? How on earth are we able to find something new? And this is why it's always really important for us to remember the saints. The saints often stood in periods of history that were in tremendous decline. I keep trying to pronounce his name, and I'm either getting stuck between Zechariah or Zachariah, or I'm not Italian, so I'm just going to pronounce it every way, and then eventually I'll get it right somehow. So Anthony Zechariah, whatever he is, he's a counter-Reformation priest. Now, the Reformation happened not because Martin Luther or John Calvin were jerks in themselves, but because of the corruptions that were going on for decades prior that nobody paid any attention to. And those corruptions were built off of the corruptions that came on before that. And then we always try to think, well, how are we going to fix it? How are we going to fix it? Well, we need more Well, maybe we should just burn the heretic alive. I don't know. What are we going to do? Anthony Zechariah, Charles Borromeo, all these reformers, they realized the very simple truth. Seek after holiness yourself. Set free those who have been rendered mute due to the powers of the world. Don't worry so much about the politics. Don't worry about so much and who's wearing the pointy hat. Don't worry about who's wearing the crown and all that junk. You have a crown already. You're baptized. You get to receive the sacrament of life on this very altar. What better food do you need? What better inspiration do we need? We as Christians don't need to be fettered by these things. And yeah, of course, when you go out, people will in fact accuse you of being some kind of devil. I really do enjoy being so accused when I'm out in the world about, because it's really quite complimentary. When people accuse me as a priest of all the conspiracies, I'm thinking, wow, you must think I'm really smart. You know, like the plots and the cunnings and all these different things that the Catholic Church is somehow behind. I'm like, wow, I wish I was that smart. But I'm not. And I don't think any of us are that smart. But we have the grace of the Father. And that's why the world is indeed afraid. We are proclaiming the truth. And so like Amos and Hosea, speaking against a society, an entire society that is on the verge of perdition, they speak one small word of truth, and the word fears them. The world fears them. You have not just heard a word of truth. You've eaten his flesh and drank his blood. Be fearless.